And welcome in to another edition of Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Derek Mason here with you today. Darren McFarland is off today. Elijah Campbell is running the board as usual. He will be joining us. We will have another bubble update a little bit later. We'll let you know what's going on as the SEC men's tournament starts this evening. Vanderbilt will be on the court, taking on the Georgia Bulldogs to get things started. Big night in Smashville last night. The Predators got a huge win. Huge win against the Dallas Stars. 2-1 in a game that they fell behind early in the third period and then made a great comeback to win, not only get the 2 points, but they got it in regulation. So Dallas gets no points. So that was big. And needless to say, there's plenty to talk about in the football offseason with all of the developments. Derek was not with us yesterday, so we'll get his take on the quarterback news. And then, of course, the Titans made the decision not to tag Harold Landry. But then, I think surprised a lot of us, just a few hours later, the story comes out that they've agreed to terms with Harold Landry. So, interesting turn of events, big decisions. So, Derek, there's a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, there is. You know, it was a whirlwind yesterday. As we, I think, you know, those that have paid attention to, you know, the NFL and trade deadlines during the season or tags, you know, franchise tags or free agency, you know, this time of year, it's going to be a frenzy. Things are going to happen that you don't expect to happen, or things are going to happen that you expected to happen. So yesterday was not a disappointment. There are things that, you know, many on one ledger expected to happen, and some on the other side, you know, didn't expect to happen. I think the whole Russell Wilson thing, because it all the talk was, Aaron Rodgers. And I think I asked Tim this a few weeks ago, you know, that all the talk is about Aaron Rodgers, but Russell Wilson is quiet over here. There hadn't been like this explosion of news about Russell Wilson. And my thing was, is that a tell sign of him staying in Seattle or, you know, him possibly moving? I forget what Tim said, but I think he still said there's a possibility of him still moving. And lo and behold, where all of the smoke and fire was with Aaron Rodgers, it all, you know, kind of jumped over the road and went to Seattle. And they trade him to Denver for, good Lord, just imagine. You see what Denver got, had what they got, or what Seattle got,
right,
for Russell Wilson? You would have had to give up way more than that for the two-time reigning MVP.
I think that only stands to reason. No question.
Exactly, because people are screaming, oh, they got a Hall of Famer. Da, da, da. I'm on the side of, he's not a surefire Hall of Famer, meaning Russell Wilson. He's just not. Maybe he continues to, you know, do the things that he's done, stay healthy, possibly win another Super Bowl. Then, yes, he's in. But I don't see him as a surefire Hall of Famer. He's one of those guys that are, at this point, he's on the edge. But if he continues to, you know, do what he has been doing and possibly get into another Super Bowl, then he's no doubt a Hall of Famer to me. So, you know, it's just think how much you had to give up for Aaron Rodgers. If they gave up, what was it, 3 first-rounders, yeah, second-rounders, fifth-rounders,
right,
you know.
So you had, for Russell Wilson, the final package. We're going to, by the way, get some perspective from Denver a little bit later in the show. We're going to go out there at 11 o'clock and see how this is resounding with the fans out there. Because it was a bold move. They're jumping in, and there's always that excitement, just like you saw the fan base here when the Titans made the bold move of going to get Julio Jones. It creates excitement in the offseason. The question is it a smart move long term? Only time will tell. But, you know, we were doing our research on Russell Wilson. you know, while all this speculation was going on, you know, you try to do your due diligence when, you know, some of the outcry of, hey, maybe they should look at replacing Ryan Tannehill. Forget about the fact that Ryan Tannehill, just to move him, would have been a major penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have had to find somebody to take his contract. You still would have had to pick up the tab for some of it. There would have been a cap penalty there. But was somebody going to take it? So the practical part was never going to work out anyway. But let's just take Russell Wilson,
mm-hmm.
okay? Russell Wilson has not been back to the NFC Championship game since they made the Super Bowl in 2015. I'm looking for his I've looked him up before, but I'll give you the particulars here in a little bit. He is going to be 34 when the season starts. So two firsts, two second, three players, plus a fifth for a fourth. So that's almost an even swap. You know, that's close. So at the end of the day, do you think the Broncos are going to be that much better? Basically what they're saying is we can be the Rams in the next couple of years. We don't need the top draft picks. We've first and second next 2 years, we don't have them. But we'll still be good enough because we have Russell Wilson. That's a big bet. It's a bold move. They have him at age 34 and 35 for the next 2 years. Is he going to be a very good quarterback? Yeah, I think he could be a very good quarterback. But can he get them where they want to go? I mean, which is, you know, contend in a very deep AFC. It's a very interesting question. And, you know, at the end of the day, the NFL benefits because it's creating an exciting storyline. Because whether it happens or not, it's going to be fun to watch to see how it plays out.
Yeah, you don't want to be that kid that, you know, in the house looking out the window while your friends are playing. You know what I'm talking about, Willie? Yeah. I've been that kid before when I was little because I've been on punishment. And I'm looking out and watching my brothers play and having fun playing football, and I want to be that guy out there with them. Well, before Denver made that trade, that's who Denver was. The kid in the house looking out of the window at everybody playing, you know, going to the playoffs, they're in contention to win. I'm not saying Denver will win a Super Bowl with Russell Wilson, but with that trade, now Denver is out the house, and they're amongst the people playing.
Yes.
So when you're amongst the people playing, you have a shot.
And I think really that's a great way to look at it because you have to understand when it's time to take the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's too many people that get wrapped up of, well, you didn't win it. But I think all you can do at the end of the day is give yourself a shot.
Give yourself an opportunity.
Yeah. The Rams, they gave themselves a shot. They won it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be paying a price down the road. If they didn't win it, you know, I still think they said, you know what? We took our shot. Mm-hmm. That's a whole philosophical conversation because in sports talk radio and on the TV shows and podcasts now, there's such a huge mentality of, well, it's not worth it unless you win the whole thing. But I think as a general manager, as somebody that's trying to put the pieces together, all you can do is say, okay, when is it time to take my shot? But the risk is in there. 2014 is when, that season is when Russell Wilson led Seattle almost to a second consecutive Super Bowl. They lost the game, the Malcolm Butler interception that, you know, was, you know, so they come within an eyelash of winning two in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But that was 2014. So since then, the Seattle never got back to the championship game. Now, you can say, well, it wasn't his fault. But this goes back to your thing, Derek, about quarterback getting too much credit, too much of the blame. If you're one of those, it's always on the quarterback to elevate your team, you know, the results haven't really been there. They've been to the playoffs a lot, but he's never gotten past. He doesn't have any wins other than the wild card win. Since that Super Bowl. And that's going on 8 seasons ago. So can he still do that? And of course, that was when they had the Legion of Boom. They had a great team around him. That's what happened. He started
great
making
running,
more.
They had a great running back.
Yeah.
You know, and this is where, you know, when you talk about Russell Wilson, you can never put him in that class of elite quarterbacks because the elite ones, you know, despite what's going on around them, they elevate their team and they consistently put them their team in a position to win a Super Bowl. Where Russell couldn't do that when he lost the Legion of Boom and he lost his running back. It was he was a good quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He always put
and
you
he
in
elevated
a position.
Them,
yeah, he always put you in a position to make the playoffs, but he never was in a real position to win a Super Bowl. Now it's up to George Patton, the GM of the Broncos. You know,
can he put that kind of roster
now?
Around
can
him?
He put this? Because he's giving away a lot.
Yeah, because now he's going to have to do it without a first and second round pick the next 2 years. So he must think that what they have now can be good enough. In that division, just getting out of the division is going to be a challenge.
See,
with the Chargers and the Chiefs, and, you know.
It was different when John Elway traded for Peyton Manning. Because I think, Indianapolis was ready to move on. They had set their eyes on Andrew Luck coming out of college. So they knew if they – and Peyton was – dealing with his injury. He had missed the season. He was still dealing with the shoulder and the neck. So it didn't cost Denver as much. They still had to give up, but it didn't cost them as much. Well, in this situation, it's costing them a lot. Denver was able to build before Peyton, and then they were able to add after Peyton while Peyton was there. Can Denver and Patton do it again? You know, you can't compare him to John Elway. Because that was a different circumstance. Peyton was coming off an injury. Indianapolis didn't want to keep him. They were ready to deal him because they didn't know whether he was going to come back 100%. It's not that situation with Seattle. So now can you build this roster up? Yes, your defense is good. You know, you lost Vic Fangio, who's an excellent defensive mind. Can you recreate that again? Without all of the veterans on defense that you had when Peyton went there.
Time will tell. That's going to be a great, great drama that will unfold in that division and, of course, in the AFC. And, yes, the Titans play that entire division next year in the regular season.
But they already beat them with the people that they have.
Listen, everybody, I know there's a lot of – it's going to be a tough schedule next year. But you know what? When you win the division, you have the first-place schedule. The schedule last year at this time, going into this past year, looked really, really tough. They found a way to go 12-5 with all kinds of problems with injuries and stuff. You just got to play.
They won the division last year, had to play a tough schedule. They won the division this year, they're going to have to play a tough schedule. Every – NFL team plays a tough schedule.
When we come back, we'll talk about the Titans and what they did yesterday with Harold Landry. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase here on 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase with D-Mace. Derek Mason with us again. Elijah Campbell back there as well. So, when we left the airwaves yesterday, still weren't sure what the Titans were going to do with Harold Landry. I'll be honest, Derek, I thought if they didn't tag him, that it was over. We had a little text chain going, and I think I texted the two words. He's gone. That's what I think I said it on the air. I said, if they don't tag him, they're basically releasing him. But obviously, when the deadline hit, John Robinson must have had a feeling, okay, we're far enough along, and maybe this is part of the leverage, the negotiations. Okay, we won't tag you. But as a show of good faith, you know, hey, look, I'm not going to tag you, but here's the offer. I think it could be good. I don't know what happened there. That was weird. But they got it done. So you know this as well as anybody because you've been through it. When you see the headline, I'm looking at Teron Davenport's article on this, 5 year, 87.5. We know in the NFL that could mean a lot of different things. But then you go to the next line, $52.5 million guaranteed. 25 years old, coming off his best year. So what's your first thought? Good investment?
I think so, from this standpoint. I think the Titans didn't want to make a one-year commitment for that much money and that much money under the cap. From what I understand from talking with individuals, the first year is cap-friendly. Now, that works better. Now, if you do the franchise tag and then can't get a deal worked out, then it's not cap friendly the first year. Yes, he's guaranteed $52 million, which is great. And I think that's what he wanted. He wanted more so the guaranteed money. But the Titans helped themselves out and Landry out by giving him the guaranteed money. But that first year is not such a big cap hit.
Yeah, I'm looking at, let's see, it's Mike Garofalo, his report, $20.5 million Landry gets in the first season. But as you mentioned, so he'll get more in the first season than he was going to under the tag. But,
but it's cap friendly.
It gives you the ability to spread it out, like you said. And so I think that was the key in the negotiations probably. It's like, okay, Harold, we can't have you playing. I think they came to the conclusion that 18.5 in a one-year deal
is not good.
Harold Landry doesn't want that. Nobody really wants to play under the tag, right? Because bad things can happen, get hurt, et cetera. So they said, okay, we'll give you more money this year, but we need to be able to spread it out so we have more money to keep the roster the way we want to keep it. So that was the key. I think so in the short term, they get to keep the front four together.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to spread the money out. Over the long term, you wonder, can he live up to that contract, and will there be a price to pay down the road? Probably so, but it's like with the Broncos. I think the Titans have identified themselves as a team in a window to win, and they're willing to spread some things out, pay the piper down the road to try to keep that window open.
Well, essentially, it's for them, it's a three-year deal. It's a three-year, $52 million deal. That's what it is for the Titans. So that's roughly about 16, 17 per. So it still keeps them under what they would have had to pay for the franchise tag. It keeps them, I believe, right where they're paying Bud Dupree. They might be paying Bud a little bit more, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Bud's tag goes, I mean, Bud's number, cap figure goes up this year from last year.
Yeah, so they're paying him a little bit less than what they paid Bud Dupree. But it's essentially a three-year deal. That's what it is. After 3 years, they can wash them because I'm sure the money kicks in, really kicks in those last, 2 years. What is it, $5 million, 5 year, 80-something million. I'm sure the last 2 years or the last 3 years, the money really kicks in as far as cap-wise. Then they can either – if he's playing well, they can rework the deal and keep him. If he's not, then he will eventually be a cap casualty.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I believe Landry and his agent, I think his agent, Tom Condon, I believe, they wanted to get a deal done. And they wanted to get as much money up front as they possibly could. And they got it, $52 million. For 3 years, essentially, that's what it is. So it's a win-win, I believe, for both sides. The Titans keep especially the first year, the Titans keep the cap numbers small. They pay him what he wants in the first 3 years, essentially a three-year deal. Landry gets the $17 million per that he probably wanted. I think that was his drop-dead number. I'm not going lower than 17. I think he got exactly what he wanted. I think he got the money up front. That he wanted more. He probably wanted, yeah. Every player wants more. But I think that number that he got guaranteed was a number that, hey, listen, we're not going below this.
And probably, I don't know that. Well, I'm sure he'll do a media conference once this becomes official.
But he won't get into particulars about
his deal. I'm curious. I think what I would want to ask him would be, did you just come to the conclusion that, look, I could have hit the open market just to see how much I could get. But at the end of the day, I think he wanted to stay with this team.
Mm-hmm.
I think he likes playing here. I think he likes his teammates. I think he thinks he's got a good thing going. And I always admire a player that's willing to do that, even though it might have cost him money. But then there's the other thing you brought up, Derek, is, he's also, I'm sure, aware of where he lives. And, you keep more of the money. So if he got more in another place, he may not necessarily keep more.
But the deal is that he may want to live here after football, too.
Well, that's another thing to consider.
Go to another state that doesn't have, state tax or, some of these other taxes when it comes to your money, investment money that you have you know, to live off of long term. So, but I do believe that he wanted to be here. When you've been in a place for 4 or 5 years, they drafted you, your first, and you like the place, your first thought is, I want to stay here. You know, I don't want to go anywhere else, because that's a headache, picking, you know, getting things packed up, selling your place, moving to another place, figuring things out. I don't know if he has a wife or anything, but if he does, then they got to figure things out when they have kids or, potentially have kids. It's just a lot to figure out. Why go through all of that? Stay here, get the deal you want, and be happy.
Now, next question, and you have been repeatedly saying this, and I think it's really important to keep in mind. How does this affect their ability to sign the most important guy on that defensive line in Jeffrey Simmons?
Hopefully
they structured this so that they have this in mind. You know, mm-hmm. without them having to say it, that Jeffrey Simmons is the guy you have to lock up, and it's going to be expensive. And as we've said, you have no problem investing in him. That's the guy you want to invest in.
Here is my Nostradamus take on this.
Nostraderic.
Nostraderic or Mesodamus. Mesodamus. Here's what it is. They have to re-sign Jeffrey Simmons in 2 years, right? So this year,
if not before that. Like, but I'm just saying,
they
got better. Yeah,
I think they will tag Jeffrey. They don't have they don't have any problem with tagging Jeffrey and then working out a bigger deal. Here's the deal. Here's the thing. This is what I predict. In 2 years, Bud Dupree will be gone. That opens up money, more money to sign Jeffrey Simmons. It's all they've structured these deals in such a way that it helps them sign the best player on their team, Jeffrey Simmons, and the second or third best player on their team in A.J. Brown. Because I still think when Derrick Henry healthy, he and Jeff are neck and neck as far as the most important people on their team, taking out the quarterback. Because obviously, you know, I know hate Tannehill, but that position is probably the most important position on any team. But taking him out. They've staggered these deals in such a way that they can sign Jeffrey Simmons when his deal comes up. They will franchise him, and it might be 20-something million to franchise him. But that's okay, because we're working on a long-term deal. So we franchise him and then work on that deal, and hopefully they get the deal done before the league, before the season starts. So they work it out. I predict that Bud Dupree is not here after 2 years. He will play this season and next season, and then he will be a cap casualty. Hmm. I think whether he's playing, you know, I can predict he won't be playing great. He will still be a good player. That opens up the door for them to say, hey, listen, you know, you were great for us. You did a good job. But because of the cap number, we got to move on.
It does say on SpotRec, for what it's worth, right? And they study this stuff. I don't, but it is interesting when I look at the different contracts on that website. It does say for Bud Dupree, potential out 2023, you could get out for a reasonable amount of dead money. So that's interesting. Does he last one more year, two more years? You got to hope that one extra year removed from the ACL, you see a very productive Bud Dupree next year, and he brings a lot to the table to where you want to keep him around.
I think the only way they keep him is if he's playing like lights out.
Yeah.
Right? He has to be playing like 15 sacks.
Because we really only saw
pressures and everything
else.
Yeah.
We only saw glimpses of it this year.
Mm-hmm. If he's a good player, I think they move on from him. Not because they don't believe he can play anymore, but they know that, hey, listen, this guy in the middle, we got to sign him. If he stays healthy, continues to play the way he has been playing it even better, which I predict he will, then you got to make some room for him on that defensive line.
This is what's so interesting about this process is we've, as media people, the fans, we fixate just on how do you get ready for next year. But a good GM is thinking
2 years ahead.
At least 2 years ahead. Two to three. No question about it. When we come back, we'll talk more about what's been going on here. We'll get Derek's take on the Aaron Rodgers saga that ended yesterday with him re-upping with the Green Bay Packers. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren, Donick, Jace, and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. The show continues here on ESPN 102.5 The Game at 11 a.m. Benjamin Albright, Broncos insider from KOA Radio. You think KOA Radio is buzzing today out in Denver?
Ooh.
Ooh. Do they have something to talk about? They've got a really good hockey team out there, number one. They've got the Nuggets. And I would imagine that those are taking a back seat for the moment for the acquisition.
They don't have to worry about the Rockies.
The Rockies are not busy right
exactly.
now. Exactly. Oh, man. I guess apparently they were talking all night last night for the baseball, and everybody was hoping to wake up to something. And
I'll believe it when I see it.
Nothing.
Yeah. I didn't lose any sleep over that. Just call me when it's over. So, how many times, Derek, when we're sitting here in the studio, were we just staring up at one of the TV screens and somebody was talking about Aaron Rodgers? It just got so old. It's just like, what could they possibly be saying that's new? But sure enough, yesterday, it ends, and he comes back. He's breaking the bank, et cetera. So the Packers have made their move. I just think at the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers was looking at it saying, you know what? It's like you're saying the reference of if you have to change addresses, all the trouble, whatever. I think he came to the conclusion, I can't do any better than staying here. It just is. It doesn't make sense to go somewhere else because of all that has to go into it. And that new place that I get to, they're going to have to give up a lot to get me. The Packers aren't going to give me away, so might as well just stay with the Packers.
If he really wanted to get traded or go to another team, he wouldn't have said anything, just played out this final season and left. The problem with Aaron Rodgers is this, and it's his own doing. You know, it's his own doing. It's his fault. Everybody blame it on Rodgers because I'm blaming it on Rodgers. You know what his problem is? He's just too damn good. No, seriously, he's just too damn good to be traded because you got to give up the team, basically, for him. And then you got to turn around and re-sign him to a deal. That's what happens when you are just too good in any sport, whether it be basketball, baseball, hockey, and I'm talking about team sports, hockey or football. If you are that good and you are still under a contract, you are almost impossible to be traded. Because whoever you're trading him to, you're going to want the farm. You are.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. You should get it. He is the two-time reigning MVP. He is arguably, within the last 4 years, the greatest quarterback. He's had the greatest four-year span that any quarterback has had. Just look at the numbers. I mean, the guy is practically flawless when it comes to playing a quarterback position. Tom Brady's the GOAT. We all know that. But Aaron Rodgers, when it comes to the athleticism and the things that he can do from the quarterback position, there's nobody close to him. Not even Patrick Mahomes. And it shows, the numbers show. They're all facts. Numbers don't lie. He's been doing it. Two-time reigning MVP. So when you're that good, that's like trying to trade Michael Jordan in his prime. In today's basketball, or LeBron James in his prime. LeBron really never moved until his contract was over, right? I think I'm not mistaken. If you try to move LeBron while he's still in the contract, he's going to be the only person on the court playing for you. Because
right.
You got to give up everything. Well, Aaron Rodgers is in the same position. So when there are speculations of him going to this team, going to that team, And people are just doing their jobs. But the reality is Aaron Rodgers is just too good to be traded. We always talk about it in the financial world. Some businesses are just too big to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers is just too good to be traded under a contract. If he wanted to leave people, he would have just played out his last year and left. Yes, you say, well, Aaron, you know, he had the leverage. He didn't have no leverage. He was still under contract. Only leverage he had was, I'm not playing. but then you don't get your money. If you don't play, you don't get your money. You play, you get paid. You don't play, you don't get paid. So as much as leverage as we say he had, ultimately, if he doesn't sign a new contract and Green Bay doesn't trade him, he will be disgruntled. Yes, people will be mad. Yes, but he's not going anywhere.
And that's still has to be worked out from the contract side because this was the twist. People were saying, you know, they were throwing out numbers yesterday when we were on the air. You know, he's going to break the bank. It's going to reset the entire market.
He might.
Rodgers comes out and via whatever it was, social media or tweet, hey, everyone, just wanted to clear some things up. Yes, I'll be playing with the Packers next year. However, reports about me signing a contract are inaccurate, as are the supposed terms of the contract I signed. So it sounds like he was just sitting back and watching SportsCenter or whatever saying, wait a minute, that's not true. So they still have to work some things out. But you were talking about leverage, right? Mm-hmm. He has leverage, but the Packers have leverage as well. This is where the ball is in the Packers' court because Aaron Rodgers knows that they're way over the salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
They want Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has got to play ball. They've got to negotiate within the rules of the salary cap how to make this work. Pay him what is fair and what he'll take, and also leave room to field a team that hopefully could win. That's a tricky thing. These are tough choices.
Yeah, it's a tough choice. I think if...
And that's part of being, as you said, too damn good, right? He makes... Yeah. If he's really being paid what he's worth, what's left over for
anybody,
everybody else? Yeah.
If Davante Adams was still under contract, say for another year or two, now the leverage is no longer with Aaron Rodgers because the cap situation is manageable. But because Davante Adams, who has been... along with Aaron Rodgers, they've essentially been probably, if you had to rank them, Aaron Rodgers is first when you're talking about offensive players. Aaron Rodgers is first. And I would have to think Devontae is in that top 10 of all offensive players. He's in that top 10, top 15, somewhere. So you got your quarterback and your wide receiver, in the top 15 of all offensive players in the National Football League. So Green Bay knew they had to do something. Either they knew they had to tag Davante Adams, and possibly the only way they could tag him is if Rodgers signs, if Rodgers agrees to come back and we rewrote this deal. That's the leverage that Aaron Rodgers had. Because Green Bay doesn't want to be without Aaron Rodgers, but they really don't want to be without Davante Adams either. So it's like, okay, we got to do something here because we want to keep Devontae because we can't franchise him until we know that Aaron's coming back and we can rework a deal. That's the leverage that Aaron had. But the team still had leverage in regards to whether you're on my team or not. Now, they would have had to get rid of a few other people if he didn't, you know, if they couldn't work out a deal with Aaron. They would have had to release a few other people, and Devontae probably would have been one of those guys. They just couldn't sign back.
I think at a certain point, a guy does have to decide whether, because you've got this, just still got this thing that's been around for ever since they drafted Jordan Love, basically, that, you know, there's this angst between Rodgers and the Packers. And at some point, you do have to decide, you know, if you want to win. You do somewhere in here, you got to partner up to give yourself the best chance. I'm not saying you take no money at all, but you know what you would hear for a long time was Tom Brady would probably not max out what he could have gotten, and who knows what they were doing behind the scenes around the guy.
Tom could have broke the bank a long time ago.
But he did, at least, you know, from what I could tell, that was the perception, is that he wanted to leave as much room as he could to put a good team around him.
That's the difference between Tom Brady and all these other quarterbacks. That's why Tom Brady is the GOAT. Because Tom Brady was thinking, I can't do this by myself. I can get us to the playoffs by myself, possibly, but I can't win a Super Bowl by myself. That's why I respect Tom. I don't like him because he's a Michigan guy, people, but I respect the hell out of him. Because he played the game the way it needed to be played. Not just on the field, but off the field, in the contract room. because he knew that, listen, I can get at that time, I can be the highest paid player in the National Football League, and I should be. I've won at the point at that point four Super Bowls, five Super Bowls. So I can get the money if I want to, but then am I going to win a championship? Because they ain't going to be able to bring none of these players back. That's why he's the GOAT, because he was able to do it on the field in the contract room as well. Aaron Rodgers, these other quarterbacks, they're not thinking about that. They're like, hey, I want my money. Y'all do whatever y'all need to do. That's why Aaron hasn't won a championship with the Green Bay Packers since he won it, what, 8 years ago, 10 years
it's
ago.
It's been over 10 years. Yeah.
Because they haven't been able to field a team. The year he won it, their defense was top-notch. Woodson was the defensive player of the year. They had a great defense. And he won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, he ain't won it. Why? Yeah. I want my money. And I don't listen, I don't blame him. You don't blame him at all. But if you want to be talked about,
balance.
Exactly. Yeah. If you want to be talked about with Tom Brady, then instead of taking 40, you might want to take 35, 30, and then build your team around it. Because if they give you all this money up front, the only person you're bringing back is Devontae Adams. You ain't going to be able to shore up that defense or anything else. You're going to lose again in the second round and have home field advantage.
When we come back, we will talk about what happened last night at Bridgestone Arena. A great win. And then, remember, at 11 o'clock, we'll go out to Denver and get some perspective on what it's been like in that city in the last 24 hours. But here at Bridgestone Arena last night, one intense sporting event, a big, big win for the Predators last night. We will talk about it on the other side. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase with D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Big night. Bridgestone Arena. Predators beat the Stars 2-1 to jump back in front of them in the standings. Still a long way to go in the season. It's going to be a two-month frenzy. But D-Mace, the Predators were down 1-0. I always dread the days on this show when you're talking about a game. The Predators were playing, they were outplaying the Stars in terms of possession, shots on goal, scoring chances, but they were behind on the scoreboard with 8 minutes to go. And, you know, at this time of the year, you definitely try to keep that in mind, but when you don't get the results, you don't get the results.
Mm-hmm.
But the game changed. It was a really interesting thing. The game changed on one play.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious how many games you can, if you can ever think of a game where this happened. The Predators were having all kinds of trouble. Dallas was in a defensive mode. Nashville kept bringing the game to them. They were shooting left and right, but Dallas was putting up this wall in front of their goalie, making it really hard. They was like, you know what? We don't have to score anymore. We just have to keep you from scoring. Then Jamie Benn, the captain for the Stars, hits Philip Forsberg from behind.
I'm going to ask you, why? I don't understand. Why would he do that? There was no clear reason why you should. Forsberg is sitting there. Well, not sitting there. He's standing there. And if I can remember, he had the puck or was going for the puck or just released the puck. And a guy comes from behind him for no reason and hits him. Like, why would you put your team in a position to now be, you know, in a penalty? Luckily for them, Ekholm goes in the penalty box as well.
Yes, which was an interesting call because I think – there's a number of ways that they could have scored that, if you will. Oftentimes what you see is they'll say, okay, I know why everybody's upset. So the referee can say, okay, 2 minutes for the hit on Forsberg.
And four.
2 minutes on Ekholm for roughing. But I'm also going to give Jamie Benn an extra 2 minutes for roughing because they went back and forth at one another. So the Predators end up with what it should have been if nobody did anything, and that's a two-minute penalty. What was interesting is, and I don't know, we'll never know the answer. The Predators were struggling on their power play last night. It's not like you ever don't want to be on the power play, but it ended up being effective for them to go 4-on-4. And that's when they scored the goal.
Do you think the reason is because Dallas did a good job? Dallas was playing not to win but not to lose. But they did a good job at, like you said, putting this wall up, you know, on the defensive side.
Yeah, they were blocking shots everywhere. They were just going to make it tough.
So when it goes to four, that wall isn't as big.
Yep,
I know it's not as many people. I know that, you know, the Preds have four and you have four, so it's still even, but that wall is not as big.
There's more space on the ice. Mm-hmm. It just changed the energy. It got the crowd into it. It got the bench energized. And this is one of those where you can't quantify it. You can't know for sure, but it just sort of, you felt it. Everything seemed to change on that hit. And so I wonder, I mean, Jamie Benn's the captain. Mm-hmm. Dallas, at the end of the day, is still in really good shape here. They're playing excellent hockey. I think they feel like they're going to win their share of games from here on forward. But I do wonder if there was a conversation between the coach and the captain saying, okay, Jamie, I know you want to be tough and everything like that, but what were you thinking?
But
why?
There has to be. There's a difference between being tough and just being dumb. He's known as a tough physical guy, but that was a dumb play from a tough and physical guy.
It just gave the Predators life. I think we've seen a lot of sporting events where that happened. I remember I was calling a Vanderbilt, Tennessee football game for the old CSS, Mint, rest in peace. It was tape delay. Back then, you did the broadcast, and then CSS would use this broadcast and play it throughout the week. They didn't have much programming. It would just be looping coaches' shows and old games. But I was doing the game with Pat Spiruto. Vanderbilt was leading, an underdog Vanderbilt team against Tennessee, who under Philip Fulmer, I think this was 2005 or 6, I have to back, maybe 2007, Tennessee ended up winning the SEC East. Mm-hmm. So they had a good team. Vanderbilt wasn't a great team, but they were ahead something like 24-9. Neyland Stadium was just quiet, deathly quiet. Vanderbilt had full control of the game. It reminded me of last night. The Stars had they were winning. They were taking on some heat, but they controlled the game. They felt like, okay, you stay 5-on-5. It's going to be tough for you to tie this game up. Same was true at Neyland Stadium. Vanderbilt had a bigger lead. It was like 24-9. Tennessee's punting. And you're thinking, wow, this is really happening here. Vanderbilt is in great shape. They might just sneak on out of here, and Tennessee doesn't even make a run. They rough the punter. Mm. So it was like 4th and 15, no reason at all to be close. Why? You don't need to try to block the punt. You're way ahead. Late in the third quarter, they rough the punter. All of a sudden, boom, the building has life. Tennessee starts thinking, ooh, we get the ball back here. Sure enough, they come from behind. Eventually, they win. Vanderbilt missed a field goal, I think, on the last play that would have won it. But Tennessee had a great comeback win. They go on to win the East. I'm sure you played in games like that. Mm-hmm. You can't quantify momentum. There's a lot of these statistician guys. Mm-hmm. They'd like to argue that there really is not that much to the idea of momentum or playing in the clutch. I just read an article not too long ago, a whole study, like sports psychologists, on what is momentum. Is there such a thing? But I think when you're in there and you're at a game, or especially if you're playing the game, you feel momentum change, don't you?
Yeah, you can feel it shifting. I'm big on momentum in game. Now, momentum from game to game, that kind of varies.
Okay.
You know,
it varies. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, you may have momentum, somebody gets hurt, or it's just weather, everything can kind of, you know, be a factor in the next game. But what the end game, I believe there is a true thing when it comes to momentum. There's a real thing of momentum, because I've seen it plenty of times. I played in games where things are just kind of, it seems like things are just kind of moving at a snail's pace and back and forth. And then all of a sudden, whether it's a big play, a penalty, or whatever, all of a sudden it energizes not just the team, but the fans around you. And then you get on this roll, and it seems like everything that you're doing is right. So to me, momentum is huge. And you saw it yesterday after the penalty. Mm-hmm. You know, the Predators bench jump up. They're mad. The crowd gets into it, and then all of a sudden, you just start to see this snowball. They get one goal. Now, even during that game, I believe, and I know you do as well, and C. Mace and Hal, the Preds were playing better hockey. They had two or three situations where they should have been goals.
Mm-hmm. Especially early. First period, they had a couple of really good looks.
Exactly, but it just the puck wasn't bouncing their way. It was just somebody had an invisible net over the you know, a visible screen over the net, and it just wasn't going in. You know, so the Preds were outplaying them, but I think it took that roughing, that penalty, to really kick it into gear.
Yeah, I agree. And coming out of it, so they get the win. The other thing that I like of these last couple of games, the Predators, as a lot of people know, they were struggling, and the biggest thing that they had lost, I thought, for a while, was they were not tight with their defensive structure. If you look at these last couple of wins, last night and then San Jose before that, they've really gotten back to a strong defensive game. They're not giving up as many chances. They're not giving up odd man rushes. They're not putting UC Saros in a position where he's got to steal the game. That's a good sign. I'm hoping they can keep that going throughout the week. I think they'll have more success here. And next up is Anaheim, who lost last night. They gave up eight to Chicago, who can score. But Chicago is not a great team. So Anaheim's coming in knowing they've got urgency here. But Nashville can really give a little – they've got some games in hand on Anaheim. That's a bubble team that they can separate. And then they can set their sights on St. Louis and Minnesota, who they're trying to catch above them in the standings.
Quickly, before we get out of here, the thing I like about the Preds is that, yes, like you said, they're buckling down on defense and they're really putting an emphasis, but they are not sacrificing their offense.
That's
Dallas sacrifices their offense, I think, at least in that game. They sacrificed their offense to make sure that they stayed in front of, you know, their goalie. The Preds don't do that. You know, they're playing good defense, but also trying to score on you as well.
Yeah, I think that's what you're looking for. When Dallas struggles, they have trouble scoring. That's what they've made a run because they've made strides offensively in these last 6-8 weeks as they've made a run. But that's a good observation. So that's something to watch. Dallas now, 10 of the next 12 for them are on the road. They've got a couple of long road trips. Let's see how they react with that. We'll get back to the Predators a little later. Chris Mason's going to join us at 1 o'clock. We'll have D-Mace and C-Mace side by side. So that is something we're looking forward to. In the meantime, we're going out to Denver to talk to Benjamin Albright from KOA Radio. Anything going on out in Denver? Oh, yeah. They got a new quarterback, Russell Wilson. We will talk about it next here on Darren Donick and Chase with D-Mace.